Shopping for flight training by the pound. Is this really the best way to get proper instruction? I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome in to the Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. I'm with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot, our usual Monday routine. And Bob, today I wanted to talk about something in your August edition about how flight training has kind of become a commodity in some ways. And first of all, thanks for taking some time for our listeners today.
Well, thanks, Paul. Thank you.
When we go shopping for, paper for the copy machine or a lot of other things, it makes sense to shop around for the lowest price. But if that's all you're looking at when you're shopping around for flight training, how big a mistake are you making?
You can make a very big mistake, and any of the readers who followed along my antics and Over the Airways knows my feeling on this, and that is we have shamelessly bad flight instruction going on in the United States. And I'm certainly not suggesting that that's the majority, but there are flight instructors who have no reason to be flight instructors other than to log hours at somebody else's expense in order to qualify for that airline or corporate piloting job. And I can tell this goes on because I every now and again I'll receive a telephone call from an individual who's responding to an advertisement that we have running in a local newspaper or on the radio. The question goes something like this: how much do you charge per hour for flight instruction? Or how much do you charge to rent your airplane, and how much do the instructors cost? And I usually answer that question by first inviting them to come in so that we can talk to them in person. But then I shift over to suggesting that they look at the total cost of a particular rating or whatever it is that they're wanting to achieve rather than the hourly cost. But the point is they're shopping on price as if they were shopping, like you said, for some sort of a commodity without really looking at to what it is that they're buying. And in flight instruction and lots of education, I mean, my daughter has been choosing colleges and largely on the basis of price. And I think the first question I ask her is, well, what's the tuition here and what's the housing cost there? Without giving adequate attention to what is the quality of education you're going to get from whatever institution she wants to go to. Same in flight training.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, if you've been through that drill recently, you know that you can send somebody to one of the state schools and get a fully accredited degree at the end of it, but it may not be the same. It may not carry the clout, and it may not be as preparatory for your career as, you know, a degree from a more specialized or what's considered a higher quality institution.
Well, yeah. I mean, this gentleman named Max Forman, and I quoted him in our last issue of Over the Airways, he says, quote, "Education seems to be in America the only commodity of which the customer tries to get as little as he can for his money." And that's a strange way of looking at it, but we try to spend as little as we can thinking that, one flight instructor is the same as the next. That's like saying that I can take aerobatic training from last year's graduate from Embry-Riddle, or I can take it from Patty Wyckoff. So you're comparing apples to oranges here in many cases, and it's something that in flight instruction it can get a lot of us into trouble, and I think is largely responsible, again, for this perplexing fatal accident rate we continue to have.
Well, Bob, let's put ourselves in the position of somebody who is responding to that ad, because anybody who's never been around the aviation environment is going to find it intimidating to challenge a flight instructor on his credentials and really is not going to have an idea what they're looking for.
The one thing that I have told people, and I've told them to call us, that who say, well, Mr. Miller, why should I choose you over somebody down the street? And I always give them the same advice. I said, listen, let me give you the names of five or six or seven people we trained. And I suggest you do the same thing at each of the other flight schools that you're interested in or considering. You know, references, actual references, is one of the best ways to determining the credentials of any service. Talk to people who have actually gone through the service. And then talk around the pilot community. Hang around an airport. Go to the hangar at the other end of the airport and say, hey, you know, how's this particular flight school? What have you heard about it? Check references, check credentials, check experiences, and see. I mean, due diligence is something that we need to do. We do this in most cases when we're picking an attorney or a physician. You know, we don't shop for, you know, chest surgeons based upon price. We do it on the basis of quality. You know, the old word, caveat emptor, let the buyer beware.
Well, and, you know, if you're buying a car, you may be comparing four or five different cars. They all have five-star crash test ratings. They all get great gas mileage. They all have great warranties. And you still look at consumer reports.
Yeah, there are vast ranges. I think there's probably a greater range in the quality of flight instruction than in any other endeavor that I can think of. I mean, you go to a veterinarian for your pet, you would assume they're all licensed by the state, they're closely monitored, and you're going to get pretty similar kind of service. But, man, what I've seen in the flight instruction community is downright scary.
Well, and I guess I'd add one caveat to one of your caveats, and that is that if you go down to the pilot's lounge and ask around about flight training on the airport, make sure if somebody brings up a negative, you check that out more thoroughly, because people do have axes to grind.
Sure. Well, you know, I certainly know that. you know, I've got a great big target on my back as well. But that's a good point, Paul. You know, if you do get a negative, then check it out and ask them to be very specific as to defining what that negative quality is, and to give details rather than just, you know, off the cuff assumptions.
All right, Bob, when we come back from the break, I remember a couple of years ago when the new FAA Wings program came about, you had criticized it as being somewhat user-unfriendly, and you seem to have modified your opinion since then. I want to find out more. My guest is Bob Miller. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
This is a story of two pilots. Our first guy, the one with Garmin Waas GPS, he just arrived home from a trip, ready to enjoy a nice home-cooked meal with his supermodel girlfriend.
Chérie, viens près moi.
But our other guy, the pilot without Waas, well, he couldn't quite make it home. Had to divert to an airport with an ILS approach. So now it's dinner from a vending machine in some crummy pilot's lounge. You know which pilot you want to be. Garmin Waas GPS. Follow the leader.
Chérie.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 G2. Interested in a substantial airplane that remains practical and affordable? Whether you're a non-pilot looking to begin flying lessons, a pilot needing personal transportation, or a fleet customer selecting the best plane to meet the demands of a multiple aircraft operation, consider the SR20 G2. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, talking about the FAA Wings program. And Bob, I remember a time when it was fairly easy to participate in the Wings program, and then they went and screwed with the website and the program and made it kind of tough for a while. And you were one of the critics, and you seem to have come around to liking it again. What's changed?
You know, I think I'm fairly typical of many pilots. We resist change. You know, we worked hard to learn what we know. And then somebody comes along and changes the rules on us, changes the procedures. We're resistant. It happened with the Lockheed Martin takeover of flight service stations. It happened with way back when you changed the classification of the National Airspace System. And when the FAA went to a computerized wings program, the FAA will admit it, it was an absolute bomb. I said in a headline on Over the Airways, the FAA laid an egg on that one. But it stayed. The program stayed. There have been improvements to the program. Speaking with Brian Neville, the National Outreach Manager for the Wings program, he's assured us at Oshkosh, he told us that within the next month or two, there will be a complete redesign again of the website, the Wings website, to make it even more user-friendly. But the underlying premise of the Wings program is something that that caught my attention, and that is the premise was based upon an analysis of 10 to 15 years of fatal accidents, looking at causal factors, and then wrapping those causal factors up into a program of recurrent training modules that an individual could complete. And then there would be a formal record made in the airman's own Wings program portfolio, if you will, so that you could systematically, year after year, actually month after month, maintain a systematic program of instruction, as opposed to seeing a flight instructor every 2 years for a flight review. This is an ongoing systematic way of keeping track of your training. There's still some problems with it. Their servers are painfully slow. They know that. It takes a little bit of a learning curve to get onto the program, but believe me, once you get into it, it is definitely a worthwhile program.
And it's, as you've mentioned before, it's tied very specifically to, you know, the chief causes of general aviation accidents, which none of the other programs are doing, except that I will note that the Air Safety Foundation, when they had their traveling seminars, because they wanted to qualify it for WINGS credit, they would also make sure that they were stressing the causes that were showing up the most frequently in recent accident reports.
Well, yes, and that's an excellent example of general aviation working together in a synergistic fashion. You know, synergism means one and one equals three. And when you take very effective Air Safety Foundation seminars and programs and interactive videos, when you can obtain WINGS credit for the completion of those kinds of seminars, then you have the best of both possible worlds. We have a record. And of course, when we keep a record, the record tends to get better. And we have excellent products that we can pick up from AOPA and the Air Safety Foundation. My own trainings that we do a Wednesday night training for pilots. We give WINGS credit for that. All of the talks that I do, and I do them probably two or three times a month at different airports, we always manage to get WINGS credit given for those. And it really is a systematic way of getting everybody up to speed, to have, again, a systematic way of keeping track. The unfortunate side of all of this, and this is extremely disappointing both to any observer and certainly to the FAA, they're estimating that less than 1%, 1%, less than 1% of the total pilot population is participating in WINGS. And that's marginally better than even the old WINGS program where we did it by hand. Even that had a very, very painfully low participation rate. You know, there are pundits in the industry that says, you know, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. Meaning that, you can put out all kinds of safety seminars and programs, but you can't get the pilot to take them in. I think once we sensitize the pilot to the fact that this is a risky endeavor, and stop selling this as, you know, as safe as a walk in the park. It isn't as safe as a walk in the park. General aviation is a risky endeavor. Let's put the facts where they are. And if we all recognize that, and then with that recognition, we become thirsty. And we thirst then for the seminars that are out there. And once we get that completion of that cycle, if you will, then I think the whole system will become ultimately safer.
Well, and I got to say, too, that anybody I talk to who asks me about my experience with the ASF seminars, I got to tell you, that is the most entertaining evening out you can have as a pilot, and certainly the most cost-effective entertainment available. Those things are great.
They are great. And the sad part of it, as I said before, such a very, very small percentage of the population, the pilot population, avail themselves to that. I think largely because we have been seduced into believing that, hey, we're good, we're getting better, this is as safe as a walk in the park, as I said again before. It isn't. And once we get that in our heads, that recurrent training is essential to remaining safe aloft, then we get more people out there, and then they will find how entertaining they are. And it is a fun night out, I agree.
Well, Bob, as always, we thank you for being here. I can't believe we're to the end of another month, but we'll talk to you again next Monday.
Thanks, Paul.
You can find the current edition of Bob's newsletter at www.overtheairwaves.com. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.